known you since I was a kid. Always thought you walked tall. Look like you didn't learn how to crawl.
Gilbert, you've got stitches, remember?
I forget. Hey, Grady, what about you?
Just gonna let him throw me in a hole and bury me?
What am I supposed to do, Buford? He deals the cards. I just play the hand I get.
Go find yourself another game.
Grady, get over here! And fast!
Well, there it is again.
What?
System. To live my way, you don't live.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast, and we are situated right now about 5-6 feet away from the sun.
Yeah.
It is really hot. It is really hot in this studio.
Oh.
But it's worse outside.
It is worse outside, yeah.
It's terrible. Don't even get the respite of night. It's
no,
hot all the time.
No, I need a bunch of women, scantily clad women with those fans. And just defend me. That's all I need them to do. I mean, if they want to do more, it's fine. But I just want the fanning.
Okay, replace that with scantily clad men, and I am on board.
You make your fantasy the way you want. That is mine. Trish Coughlin, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
And they're both good fantasies. Yeah, sure. I'll go with that.
Which one?
Yeah. I prefer yours.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm not into the scantily clad men, but the fanning part, all on it.
Ooh. Yeah. I have a better fantasy, a fully clothed man who will build me a wonderful air conditioner. That's the fantasy now.
Or just like build you like a refrigerator around your room so you don't even need the air conditioner. It's just like a walk-in
a room of
fridge.
Cold.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I don't want it like to, I want to be able to stay in there so it's comfortable, not too fridgy. Like just an AC unit. That's all I need. That's the fantasy.
Send your sympathy portable AC units to Invasion of the Remake.
gmail.com.
I need a post office box for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Coming in the near future. Sam Stepanenko, everybody.
Oh, yes. That's me.
Yay.
And today we are going to be talking about the life and times of Buford Pusser.
Mm-hmm.
Kinda.
Kinda. Sort of, kind of, maybe.
Sort of, kind of, maybe.
Are we pronouncing his name correctly? Because in the movie, I think they called him Pusser.
Pusser? Pusser. I wasn't sure because it seemed like they were doing both.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. But yeah, I mean, neither of them sound particularly nice, to be honest.
No.
No.
I mean, better known as Walking Tall, 1973. And, of course, we'll be talking about the loose remake, Walking Tall, 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, in 2004, this will be our first Dwayne Johnson movie.
I know. Well, and he's not credited as that.
Ah, he's credited as The Rock. You are correct.
Uh-huh.
I was about to go there. Oh, you guys ruined my.
I'm
thing.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Whoever gets there first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed it right away too. Yeah. He's credited as The Rock in that, and that means he was still under his WWE contract.
Well, you look at the credits. They're like executive produced by Vince McMahon.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
And WWE Entertainment, yeah.
Oh, okay. So this is early days of WWE films as well.
Yeah.
And actually a half-decent film compared to most of the ones they've
That's
made.
That's the thing. If you look at the production values of any of the other ones, they're shit. But this one is decently...
Yeah.
Has a decent... co-production.
Yeah. Every now and again, they'll like just pick up something for distribution. And mm-hmm. Yeah, those are usually better films because they had nothing to do with making them.
Yes.
And The Rock and Vince McMahon have partnered up again recently, shooting the life story of 20-something Paige, who hasn't been wrestling for the company for a while because she's been out on injury and seems to be doing her damnedest to get released from the company.
Oh, nice.
she's not. She doesn't seem to be on the best of terms, but they're making a movie, and if that's the case, then WWE doesn't want to fire her ass. So
no,
they kind of have to stick around until the movie's done and out and whatever. But yeah, so they're still working together.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like WWE, a lot of people just kind of want out because this is
well, and
you want out.
Her fiance is Alberto Del Rio / El Patron these days in the indie circuit, and he left, and he's been very vocal. Well, this is the second time he's left that company, and pretty vocal about how crap he feels about that. I mean, I'm sure not everybody gets that kind of treatment, but and then Paige has had a few violations in her health and conduct.
Well, the hilarity,
but I think they're on purpose.
True. Well, the hilarity of it is watching the original where he mentions the whole business of being a wrestler, or like they freaking own you and you can't do
anything.
It's so funny they chose this.
They cast a wrestler in the remake, but the character was never a wrestler.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, of course not. They're not going to.
I appreciate the irony of that for sure. Yeah.
Whereas the original Buford. I'm just going to call him Buford.
Yep.
Buford. He actually did wrestle for Mid-South in the 50s, I guess, and was known as Buford the Bull.
The Bull, yes. I was trying to remember Buford his nickname. Bull.
Yeah. Now, the 73 is an adaptation of his life, and it's, I did read the wiki bio on this guy. I researched, but not hard. And the movie's fairly accurate. I mean, there's definitely dramatizations, things moved around, and character names changed. I mean, when you're dealing with Southern Mob.
Dixie Mafia.
The Dixie Mafia.
Dixie Mafia.
It. Yeah.
Corruption going all the way up.
Yeah, so names were changed, except for his.
Yeah.
And actually, he died mysteriously a year after this film was made in a single car accident. It looks like he lost control and skidded into a tree after all of the shit and abuse that he took and survived. And
shot 8 times, knifed 7.
Yeah.
Shit. And it's, you know what? It's funny, in the remake, they mention, like, yeah, it's kind of crazy. About a few months ago, he died. His car wrapped around a tree.
Mm-hmm. And
so it's a not so subtle nod.
Well, and his family, his family does suspect he was murdered.
Of course.
Yeah. And I mean, it's mysterious and
that much corruption. Of course he was.
Yeah. I'm not going to say whether he was or wasn't. I have no facts on that, but it certainly sounds like another movie.
That old 90s phrase, things that make you go,
Yeah. Maybe next episode of Serial.
Maybe. This movie in 1973 was budgeted at about $500,000, but it made $23 million. So it was a huge success at the time for director Phil Carlson, who also directed The Silencers, was probably his best known work. Mm-hmm. And it was, the scripts were by Mort Briskin, Stephen Downing, and an uncredited John Michael Hayes. Now, I couldn't find anything spectacular about Mort or Steven when I was looking at their resumes, but the uncredited John Michael Hayes, he wrote The Man Who Knew Too Much, Rear Window, and To Catch a Thief.
Holy crap.
Starting to wonder who did the heavy lifting here.
That's what I was thinking.
Holy Jesus.
Yeah, that's quite the resume.
The guys were like, we'll pay you a bunch of money if you're uncredited, otherwise nobody will ever know who we are.
Yeah, exactly. And this movie starred Joe Don Baker as Buford Pucer. This was one of those stupid credit lists where, like, in the order of appearance, I'm like, well, fuck. And half of them don't have pictures in IMDb. So his wife in the movie was Elizabeth Hartman, who was actually the voice of the main character in Secret and Him, which was pretty cool.
Last credited film role.
Her last credited film role. She actually committed suicide and was one of two people on this film who committed suicide.
Oh, my God.
I know. Terrible. And I also wanted to credit, where is he? Felton Perry as Obra.
Okay, yeah, he was pretty good.
Cool. Yeah.
I loved him in this movie.
Joe Don Baker's had a pretty good career. He was in like 3 different Bond movies. Two of them were a recurring character, one was a different character, and those movies were GoldenEye, Tomorrow Never Dies, and Living Daylights. Also, Leif Garrett was in this movie. He was in The Outsiders. Lorene Tuttle was his played his grandmother, and she was in Psycho.
Nice.
Which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people who have like a pretty good, some prestigious stuff in their background.
Yes, yes. And then we get over to the remake in 2004, directed by Kevin Bray. Mm-hmm. His claim to fame was All About the Benjamins.
Okay.
That's a good movie. I like that movie.
It's a decent movie. He's a decent movie. The screenplay for that one was by David Klass, who wrote Kiss the Girls, Channing Gibson, who wrote Lethal Weapon 4, and two more people. Oh, my God. David Levine and Brian Kopelman, who are co-writers, and they wrote things like Rounders and Ocean 13.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I like Kiss the Girls.
Yeah. So when you... If you credit all the guys from the original film, and then all the guys this one, that's like seven writers.
Wow.
That's a lot of writers.
That's a lot of writers.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you can get up to four, and maybe it can turn out okay. It's like when you see the number of writers, and it gets to like almost double digits.
When it's larger than the cast of the remake.
Yeah, you gotta be like, oh, this is gonna go badly.
Right? The remake was budgeted at $56 million. It had an opening weekend of 15.5 in the U.S. and grossed in the U.S. $45.8 million. So WWE didn't make any damn money on this one.
No.
No.
Just sort of adequate. Well, I think it was, like you say, he's credited as The Rock. And when I remember when I first saw this movie come out, I mean, I liked The Rock. I did. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh, this is just like a wrestling movie. And he wasn't a big draw.
Yeah. Well, at the time, I might have thought the same way. Yeah. And he's still a wrestler in most people's minds. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I look at The Rock now and he's way more jacked than he was in this movie.
Yes.
He looks so baby-faced.
When he was a wrestler.
And he wasn't as ripped and big.
Yeah. No,
but no. He just looks so precious, like his little baby face.
Yeah. No,
and I actually wanted to see this because I knew it was a remake of the 70s movie.
Yeah. Which was a huge success. It spawned two other sequels, as well as the remake did direct to video. But it also, the original was two sequels with different actors and a TV movie remake, as well as a television series.
Oh,
And Kevin Sorbo did two Walking Tall movies after The Rock's, and he was a different character than the one The Rock played.
Yeah, and interesting fact, Buford Pusser was supposed to play himself in the remakes, in the sequels.
At least one of them.
A contract.
He wound up getting his wish because the original actor, he wanted to play him, which wasn't Joe. And I don't remember who it was, but they wound up getting him for those two sequels, which didn't do nearly as well as this movie did.
No, it's a hard follow up because I mean you've got such a wealth of material from the from the true story to work with. Everything else becomes fictionalized after the end of this movie, basically, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I know the movies are fictionalized to a certain extent, but most of it seems to sort of fall in line with the truth with the facts of the story.
Yeah, and he because of this movie lost his sheriff gig. He lost the next election because they didn't shoot in his town, although the town itself thought it would paint them in a bad light, so they didn't want it there. And then the neighboring, not realizing that, you know, this work-poor town could have made lots of money off of this thing, so another town got all the money for it.
Well, it's one of those things, is like, it's not our fault, you're idiots.
Yeah. But at that point, he'd made a career transition into film. He was a technical advisor on this one. I think he was on the sequel. I think that got shot before he passed away.
No, he died before it got shot.
Oh, did he?
He died like days after signing the contract to play himself in the sequel.
Some of his other family members became advisors on those other films. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, you think about it when you're talking about like a series. I can kind of see this more... Like, think Justified, like that small town thing. It's a wealth of
sure.
It would be good.
The series didn't last very long, apparently, but from what I could tell.
But with good writing, you could make something out of it.
Oh, sure.
I mean, Justified is a good example because it basically is Walking Tall when you really think about it. Right? In a lot of ways, right? It's a marshal rather than a sheriff, but sort of working against the Dixie mobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we were discussing this film last week about doing it this week, it kind of came to my mind where it feels like a lot of those action stars did a movie like this early in their career.
Yeah.
You know, I can think of Vin Diesel did A Man Apart, which is kind of like this. Schwarzenegger's got one.
Yeah, Raw Deal is essentially this one.
Yeah, Raw Deal.
Yeah, I think this became a template for a lot of the sort of clean up the town action flicks.
Yeah.
Roadhouse?
Yeah, Roadhouse is a very good example of that.
That's a good example, too.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, I mean, it's been remade before, but not sort of officially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say this movie, if you started counting them all up as far as what inspired other movies, they'd probably well over 20 of them, if you include all the sequels and stuff.
Yeah, easily. Like, this template of some moral guy coming to, like, this super corrupt town where one guy owns it and just cleaning shit up. That's something that's been done again and again and again.
Well, that's more what the Rock's version of this movie is, but not in this one.
No,
there's an organization. Yeah. There are several corruptions happening when he returns to this town he had grown up in. He's retiring from the ring, and he's moving back home, and he's seeing things are very different here.
But he's trying to stay out of it. I mean, that's the thing is, he's trying to stay out of it. He starts his logging business and working with his friends and just sort of minding his own business, right? Mm-hmm. It isn't until they start to affect him personally that he starts to sort of make some decisions.
Yeah, well, that was when one of his friends pops up and starts bringing him to the local casino, and that's Ludi.
Yeah, poor Ludi.
And that's another reason why I didn't list a lot of the cast, is a lot of them are one-scene characters.
Yeah, Ludi doesn't last long. To me, he was fairly memorable, though. Yeah. Like,
and
he's
even
that...
the gangsters, other than the lady, didn't get proper introductions. Actually, she didn't even get a proper introduction. She just got the most screen time out of all the villains in the film.
Like, I mean, even the guy who was her boyfriend / co-pimp, he's the only reason I knew he was that was because of just seeing clues.
Yeah.
Because you didn't really know.
No, they don't do proper introductions of those characters.
Yeah, and the one guy was Moonshine only because I know he was there when they busted up the Moonshine bit.
Yes, yeah, he comes by later on and tries to make a few attempts on his life.
Yeah, and then there's the casino guy. You just know he's the casino guy from seeing him there. And it was already a long movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters floating around. Yeah. It's a long movie. Sometimes I think they spend a little too long in certain scenes. Like when he's left roadside and he's just struggling.
Oh, that was so painful to watch, because it's
long.
It's powerful.
That's the thing. It was long, but I didn't mind it because I was so engrossed and it was so tense. And I'm like, oh my God, what's happening? Like, he gets on the road and somebody sort of, it's a woman in the car and you see some bloody guy on the road. And you're going to think twice.
Oh yeah, lots of cars passing by before the rig stops. And then you go to the remake and they skip all of that. They just go straight to the rig picking him up.
But yeah, like I did not feel that part was too long. It was like a lot of tension.
Yeah. Well, let me run the trailer before we get any further into this, and we'll talk some more about Walking Tall.
I thought you walked tall. Like, you gotta learn how to crawl.
Walking Tall, the story of a real man who has become a living legend.
Dude, why don't you try this job on for size?
I was like the sheriff on one issue that I'd bust every joint in the whole county.
Talked to Witter this morning. He said to put him away.
They beat him.
How does it feel to be part of the oppressed minority?
They cut him.
Just come home to get half killed.
They taunted him.
You can't let them! Join them!
They tempted him. They even shot him.
Ordinary man wouldn't have made it through.
But they couldn't shut him up.
Let them do this to me and get away with it, and you'll give in the eternal right to do the same damn thing to any one of you.
Or hold him down. He was going to give them law and order, or die trying. Walking Tall.
All right. Well, now that I got to see the trailer again, there was a thing that just stood out like a sore thumb. So let's talk about some of the stupider aspects of this movie for a moment.
Yep.
There's a moment where the sheriff, this corrupt sheriff in the town, is trying to drive Pusser off the road.
Yeah.
And I think this is right after he loses the election. So.
No, it's before. He doesn't.
It's before. Yeah. He's still sheriff. At
oh, he's still sheriff. Okay,
that's right. But Puss's running against him. It's right after Puss's
the trial
is putting up posters at the
right.
the black
yeah.
Bar there.
Yes, yeah, the black cub.
Yeah,
club
and,
there.
And yeah. then he starts following him because Pusser peeled out of the parking lot. He's like, oh, that's a reckless driving charge if I ever saw one.
Yeah,
and then start chasing him.
Yeah, instead of pulling him over and getting him a ticket, they're trying to run him off
run
the
him
road.
Off the road. Yeah,
and this is I don't know death attempt number 20 or whatever. Yeah. But he's going for a ram, and there's this small bridge coming up, and the sheriff loses control, and there's this embankment just outside of the bridge before he goes into the river.
Yeah,
below, and the car blows up. Just as it hits the embankment, not before it goes over. Like somebody blew
well
that car.
Before.
Yeah, somebody blew that car up way too early.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, why did it have to blow up? Is no, my second question.
I wrote down it just spontaneously combusted.
Maybe here's the running theory. The sheriff was so mad that he spontaneously combusted and caused the explosion.
Yes, it wasn't the car at all. It was the sheriff.
The sheriff himself. Yeah. And the sheriff really did die just before the election, when Buford got elected for sheriff as the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that is fact. I mean, the circumstances of it, I think, are different. But
oh, I'm did, sure yeah. there's a lot of dramatization yeah. in here that's changed yeah. for dramatic
but
effort.
Like Buford, he did die in a single vehicle crash.
Right.
Nice. Yeah, you got to be wondering, I'm like, why do we keep losing sheriffs? It's like Murder, She Wrote. Every time Jessica Fletcher shows up, people die. Every time we get a sheriff, he dies. Something's wrong.
Yeah, she's a serial killer. She's
oh, yeah.
covering up by
if she came
by,
in
quote,
into
unquote,
town,
solving murders.
Somebody's introducing this old lady to me. I'm gonna be like, I'm going on vacation for a little while. Tell me when she's gone.
Exactly.
Yeah. Tell me when they catch the inevitable killer.
Yeah.
I just don't want it to be me, and I don't want to be the victim.
Yeah, exactly. I'm out. Nothing but shit happens around her. So
I know, which is why I'm always very careful when befriending writers.
Are you a crime writer? No? Okay, no, we're good.
Sci-fi? All right, I'm on board.
Yeah. Take me into space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's another scene in the movie that, I mean, it stuck out like a sore thumb to me when I saw it. And I mean, it still makes me laugh just thinking about it. That very first fight scene in the casino.
Yes. Mm.
There's the one guy who's nowhere near the fighting. And all of a sudden, he just sort of leaps up and crashes into a table.
Oh, yeah. No. What happens is Buford punches him the usual stage punch, which is about 2 feet from the guy he's actually punching. Mm-hmm. The guy falls back, runs into this guy, but like he just like lightly goes back, and this will propel like a 200-pound man up in the air and into a table. It's that whole Star Trek, oh, we've been hit. Ah.
I think I figured it out. Like in Pusser's world, physics works differently.
I guess so, yes.
I think it's just 1970s action works differently.
Yeah. Because
we've seen this in other 70s action films where,
sure.
Where the fight scenes are very carefully staged but not very well choreographed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's what the sense I got from this is they sort of came up with an idea as to how they wanted the fight to look, but they just didn't have the right stunt coordinator to make it
yeah,
look.
Yeah, somebody told this guy, you got to do this, but nobody thought, what motivates him doing that?
I know. And it's some of it is like that slow, I'm going to wind up, and then I'm going to punch you. And then finally it lands. I'm like, that's... Oh, I think we've been spoiled by good fight scenes.
This is the inevitable post-craps fight.
Yeah.
Whenever there's a loaded pair of dice on a craps table, this is the fight that happens.
Exactly. Yep.
Over-exaggerated and really weird.
True. It's that loaded dice. Loaded dice make people fight funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that funny weight. It's thrown them off.
They've already messed with physics by loading the dice, and it just messes up everything. That's what it is.
There it is, yeah.
They've fucked with the space-time continuum.
Oh, Buford.
Everything seemed to be a little more correct in the remake, though.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all updated in the remake, too. It's modern day.
Yeah.
Modern 2004.
Yeah, although I don't know if I've ever been in a casino with that many. Like, I never been in a casino / strip club casino. Like, with women on things and in...
No.
Under showers. I've never seen that.
I loved that water gun thing.
The shower tower.
So it works like a Carney water gun game where, you know, you're shooting at this thing and the little stuffed animal goes up and you win a prize the first one gets up there. Except there are two strippers up in these shower cages, and they go up, and as the water goes in, they get water comes down on them.
Yeah. I thought it was like a mallet, like the when you ring the bell.
Yeah, I thought there was mallets. Yeah. They had to keep dinging it.
Yeah, so they combined two carnival rides and strippers.
I would have been better as a water gun.
Because they're really low down, not getting much water, but the more dings they get, the higher and the more water.
Because that mallet that his friend is using plays later on during the brawl, remember?
Oh, yes, you're right. It was a mallet game.
And then there's like two girls just like sitting on an ATV that's spinning around. Like, just that's their, like, how bored would you get after like 4 minutes? Yeah,
but you know what? It's a great freaking business model when you think about it. Because what sells? Casinos and Scandal Cloud Women? I mean, you're going to get a lot of horny rednecks in there.
I guess.
Sure. I mean, small towns, not much to do. I mean, I can think of a Canadian town that's Windsor, Ontario. Yeah. I mean, they're just outside of Detroit in Canada, and much like Detroit, when a lot of the automotive industry went away, that was a lot of their industry as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of people worked across the border in those factories. So now the biggest employer in that town is a huge casino.
Yeah, it's a depressed Las Vegas town, it's always a casino.
Yeah.
It's a casino, and it's drugs, and it's all this other stuff. That's the new economy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that in most modern day casinos, I think that it's probably legitimate business. But I mean, by the nature of the business and the history of the business, I'm sure that there's some underhanded dealings happening in some of these smaller, out of the backwoods type casinos.
Mm-hmm. Of course,
right? I mean, I'm making assumptions at this point, but
yeah, I know
it's like, not that far fetched. Is what I'm saying.
No, it's not. No. I mean, I know the one in Windsor is probably clean as a whistle because it's owned by one of the big ones in Vegas as well. I mean, that's corporate's actually, it's as clean as corporates can make it. Because let's face it,
corporates aren't that clean.
Corporate casinos now that took over Vegas are probably much sketchier than the gangsters were.
Oh yeah, yeah, like
in a different way, but yeah.
Yeah, much more likely to destroy lives, know the legal loopholes to do so.
Yeah, they might not kill you outright, but they'll destroy you.
They won't break your legs, but they will ruin every aspect of your entire life.
Yeah. I mean, the oversight on casinos is microscopic, right? Like, I mean, they monitor every single little thing. I mean, they have gaming commissions.
Yeah, they even mentioned the gaming commission in the remake. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When that guy with a load of dice is outed by The Rock.
Yeah.
And
Chris Vaughn.
Yeah, Chris Vaughn. But we'll just call him The Rock.
Yeah.
Later on, after beatings and a trial and all that, but later on, he says, no, that guy was fired.
He lost his license. And I'm like,
his license with the gaming commission.
I almost died. Sorry. Yeah. Like, oh, boo-hoo.
Oh, yeah. And what's his name? Was it Jay?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
What's his name? Neil McDonough plays Jay.
Yeah.
And... oh, I might as well do the rest of the cast here as well. But yeah, Neil McDonald plays Jay, and he comes up to The Rock and offers him a job as head of security, like weeks after his injury. This is after he's been cut up and left for dead on the side of the road, and he's all healed up again. Mm-hmm. So in no time did he visit him during that time.
Oh, no.
So yeah,
to make any kind of restitution or recompense or even apology for the overzealousness of his security staff.
Yeah, needless to say, The Rock is pissed.
But there's the thing about the overzealousness. I'm like, that's not overzealous. That is criminal behavior. There's no such thing. That's overzealousness that's doesn't involve. Yeah, overzealousness doesn't involve cutting somebody up. Yeah. That's
Which did happen in both movies.
Yes, it did. So Walking Tall 2004, it stars Dwayne Johnson, of course, The Rock, credited as The Rock, as Chris Vaughn, Ashley Scott as Denny, and she was in AI, as well as a voice in The Last of Us.
And a completely extraneous character.
Yeah. And really, at the end of the day, she was just a thrown-in love interest that really had no point being there.
She was the tits that he could do stuff with. Was like you say, it's not...
There ain't nothing wrong with hers.
No, there isn't. But it's like, I don't mind a character, but like if she just had more to do, I might have been okay.
Yeah. No, every time she popped up, I'm like, all right, I totally forgot about her. And this movie's barely an hour and a half.
Yes. Yeah. No. And I mean, in the original movie, I mean,
she's more Buford's
wife. Yeah. She's a very important character. I mean, she's the one who tries to talk about becoming the sheriff. Yeah.
He's married and has kids in the original. In this one, he's single and this is his ex who's now a stripper at the club.
But the other thing about it too, in the original, you have that other woman who is a much more significant character as well, even than Denny in this one.
And when you find out, she's like Neil McDonald, Jay Hamilton, who runs this town, had dated her once as well. Yeah. But none of this is important. None of this ever comes to play within the film. No. So why bother telling me that?
Yeah. No, she's completely, like I said, extraneous. She served no discernible purpose aside from being a piece of eye candy and a quote unquote love interest for.
Yeah. And it's insulting. She could have been more.
She could have been more. Yeah. Absolutely.
Because they had the template from the original movie, which was that other one, that other woman. And she was complex and she was morally ambiguous and she was interesting and cool headed. She was a badass.
And
I loved her.
That was in 1973. So I'm not sure what happened there. They definitely stripped this movie down to bare bones.
It's a good 35 minutes shorter than the
it's much shorter.
I think this is the WWE influence. We don't know what to do with
possibly.
Women.
Well, and I mean, the biggest comparison I can make between these two films is the original movie is really a tragic movie.
She was in 12 rounds with John Cena later on.
There's a lot of wrestling movies, this girl. Yeah. And then the second one is your straight up action film. They miss all the pathos.
Yeah,
and
I would call the original one more of a crime drama.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, it was... Well, what's that one that Sylvester Stallone did where he gained all that weight for it and he was, like, a sheriff in a small town,
too? Copland.
Yeah, Copland.
Yeah.
More like, that's what they probably should have been aiming for and did not.
Yeah.
No. I mean, when you got somebody like The Rock, you're going
to... Cater to his strengths.
Yes,
but
cater to his strengths. And they were... And even at that point, that was what they were trying to do, is make him the next action star.
Which they did successfully.
Yeah. It took a while, but they got him there. Well, it didn't even take that long.
No.
I mean, it was only another year or two later, Schwarzenegger pretty much hands the keys to the kingdom to him. So now he rules the roost. So,
well, I mean, even in this one, he's very green, but I still enjoyed watching him on screen.
Yeah, I know. He's always got a natural charisma, which is the key to his success within the WWE. I mean, he didn't have that much success as a straight-up wrestler, and he certainly had a lot of talent and pedigree along with it within that realm, but it was when he got to unleash all the charisma that he has, and when he was allowed to cut some promos, that's when we really got to see him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that carried over really well into film. And I think Cena's got that as well, and I think we'll probably see that. We're already seeing that transition happening with John Cena.
Oh, yeah.
And he's getting some pretty good parts, and I think he's probably at some point is going to have a very similar career path.
Cena has had some amazing bits. There's two movies. He was in Trainwreck, where he was amazing, and in that one with Sisters with Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, he was awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, he's been in a bunch of WWE movies, and I think 12 Rounds is one of their more successful ones, but you know, now he's starting to do non-WWE stuff, and his in-ring stuff is lessening and lessening as he's getting a little older, and he's going to make that transition. I'm sure of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's now got that everything, they've got a model to follow, right?
Yeah,
I mean, because The Rock showed them how to do it.
Yeah, and here's this handsome, jacked dude who's actually really good at promos and a pretty capable actor as well.
Well, I think the big thing too about The Rock and Sean Cena that you is neither of them are, even though they play arrogant characters, neither of them are really arrogant men in real life. They both tend to be fairly self-effacing.
Depend on what you read.
Well, I mean, given the nature of their careers, there's a certain amount of arrogance that's required.
Sure.
But there's also a generosity about them that needs to be there.
Because, right? I mean, even if you look, like you say, depending on what you read, but like think about all the other action stars, they're pretty humble comparatively.
They seem to be very genuinely likable people.
Yes, so that's the point I was trying to make. Right?
And they can make, like some of them, they can make fun of themselves. That's the thing. Yeah. If you have that inner strength to do that, people will like you.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why Rowdy Roddy did so well as an actor as well, is he was that same type of person. He played a bad heel in wrestling, but by all accounts, he was in his personal interactions with people outside of wrestling, he was a really great guy. Again, that arrogance that comes with being a celebrity, but
yeah, he didn't have a big career path in acting.
Like, but he was
always working.
Yeah, and compared to the other actors that were coming, wrestlers becoming actors around the time, he was by far the most competent.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure,
right.
Sure, Hogan's got probably a bigger resume and a little bit bigger presence as far as the films he did, but. I mean, he was terrible on everything.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Oh, sometimes I was like, "Oh no, is this happening?"
Even his like first thing in Rocky, his Thunderlips there was just awful. Anyway, let's get to the rest of the cast here.
But I think that's the problem. Like his arrogance was couldn't make fun of himself. Sorry, just one more thing. The Hulk couldn't make fun of himself. That was a problem.
Yeah, that's true. He couldn't really be any other character. Yeah, that was when he was most successful, when he was just being that character, because it was the only character he knew to play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so another jackass who moved into acting was Johnny Knoxville. See what I did there?
Jackass. Yeah, that was nicely done, Jay.
Oh, no, it wasn't.
It was pretty ham-handed, actually.
It was pretty hammy. He plays...
We're trying to be supportive.
He plays Dwayne The Rock Johnson's Chris Vaughn's best friend. Michael Bowen is the first sheriff in the film. He's one of Tarantino's boys. He was in Kill Bill, Django Unchained, and Jackie Brown. Neil McDonough, we just mentioned. People might know him most recently from Captain America, the first film, as Dum Dum Dugan. But I know him best from Band of Brothers.
And I know him best from Justified.
Oh, yes, he was in Justified.
I was watching it, I'm thinking, he plays the same guy. He always seems to, every time I see him, he seems to be playing a bad guy.
Oh, yeah, I've only seen him evil. Yeah.
Interesting fact.
Well, he was a good guy in Captain America.
Yes,
he was a good guy in Band of Brothers.
He actually does play a good guy. It's just that his bad guys are very memorable.
Yes.
Because of the way he looks.
Yeah.
Right? He's got those really freaky blue eyes and that really blonde hair.
Yeah.
But interesting fact about him is he refused to do a movie because of the sex scenes in it. Apparently, even though he plays bad guys a lot, he's actually quite religious and refused to do it because he didn't feel comfortable doing nude scenes.
Mm. Right.
In Desperate Housewives, I think he also didn't do that either. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
So it
certainly hasn't hurt his career path because he's a very busy actor.
Yes, he is.
John Beasley, who you might remember from The Purge and the really terrible Jack Ryan film, Some of All Fears, he plays Chris Vaughn Sr., his dad.
Oh, yeah. I love him.
Yeah. Barbara Tarbuck is his mom, Connie. She was also in the original Short Circuit and the sequel to Donnie Darko called S. Darko.
Cool.
Kristen Wilson, also in here. She was in Dr. Doolittle, plays Vaughn's sister.
That's it.
Also frustrating because she's introduced as a cop character, but she's not a cop in this town.
No, she's an EMT.
Oh, she's an EMT.
EMT.
Oh, really looked like a cop outfit.
Yeah,
but
no.
It's blue, not the tan of the cops, yeah.
Okay, that is
either way, another
why
way
she was useless as a dominating force. Okay, that makes a little more sense that she was, you know, hostage girl.
Yeah, but she's still somewhat wasted.
She could still be a dominating force. Because here's what frustrated me the most is I'm sitting there going,
"Is a wasted character.
It's a wasted character." And I'm like, why can't she do anything? Like, I don't know about you, but like, I grew up in rural towns, and this is what bothered me about her and the Denny character. I'm like, neither one of you know how to shoot a gun. You grew up in a rural town.
Yeah.
That was one of the first things I goddamn learned.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as we're talking about it, I'm like, really? The only characters that weren't wasted were Chris Vaughn, Jay, and Johnny Knoxville's character.
Well, if Chris Vaughn isn't married in this one, like Pooser was in the original, you could take the sister character, and it's sad to say his wife dies near the end of the original film.
Yes.
She's shot in the back of the head during his chase sequence, and it's really tragic, and this actually happened in real life with Pooser. But this would have been a good place to use one of those characters in that position.
Oh, it would have been great. Like, having her as an EMT, the problem was she would have been out on a call to, like, save one of the other guys. Then she ends up getting cut down in, like, the
crossfire. They don't take any of these other secondary characters and anything really bad happens to any of them.
And they don't have the story.
Except for the nephew. Yeah. I mean, he takes some crystal meth and goes to the hospital for a few days. And that drives Chris Vaughn to go back to the casino where they are being distributed. And he goes and trashes the place. But that is really the only thing really bad that happens to anybody in these families outside of Chris himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, aside from the home invasion bit. Yeah. But again, nobody really gets hurt. That's the
like, Ludi dies shortly. We don't even see it happen. We just hear that he's dead.
And then they have, like, in the original
dialogue,
they're having fun at Christmas.
Yeah.
And this guy comes to try to assassinate them. He kills the guy who came, and their dog is dead.
Yeah. There's so much tragedy in the original. And you don't need to see all of it, because it did make it very challenging to watch the original movie, I'll be honest. But some of that should have been brought into the remake. The motivation for The Rock's character was not as strong as the original.
Well, it also speaks to who Buford is, is that he's not that hair trigger temper, because it feels like Chris Vaughn is that, but it's like he's got a lot of reason to do what he does in the original. A lot of goddamn reason.
Well, I mean, I was frustrated that we didn't see Ludi die and all we got was a piece of dialogue, because here's a guy who's shown himself to be Pooster's friend, and they show their friendship. He's the one who takes the casino, but he's also a witness to everything that happened, which is why he gets... Something happens to him. We don't know what happens to him.
But it's a pulled out of the river. Disappearance kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But we can surmise what happens to him. But I think it's actually important to see that happen. But that also requires you to leave the shoulder of Pooser, which never really happens.
That's true.
Yeah.
I want to go back to something that Trish said about Chris Vaughn's sort of off-the-handle type of behavior versus Buford's behavior. Because even the first when he goes back to the casino and busts it up, he's going there to hand them a bill for his station wagon, which was disappeared, stolen. I don't remember exactly what happened to it.
They're hiding it.
When they yank him out of the casino and leave him for dead, they take all of his possessions out of the casino and the car as well.
And disappear it because...
They're not expecting him to survive. Yeah.
Well, no. What they do is take all the evidence and dispose of it.
Yes. That's exactly
what they're doing.
If he didn't survive, then they... can say he was
what
never there.
Yeah.
And Ludi still will probably disappear. Yeah. So, there was no... Yeah. He was never here.
Yeah, it was all cover up. But the fact that he goes and hands him the bill, I mean,
like, that's
there's a motivation. It's like, I want recompense for what you did to me.
Yeah.
Right? I want the doctor's bill money back, and I want...
Yeah. And then he's accused of knocking him over, but he just wants what he's owed.
Yeah.
He actually hands all the money back because they're going to give him a lot more. Yeah. And he's like, no, that's not mine. This is mine.
Well, he gave him a bill and he says, you sign it.
Yeah.
And you give me my money. And he says, no, I just want this much. And he counted it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's arrested anyway. But.
Yeah.
Of course, because everybody's crooked.
Yeah.
Oh, that reminds me of the judge, but we'll get to that later.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to that. I love that
bit. I absolutely love that bit.
I also missed that in the remake. I thought we should have seen
more of the crooked
more
judge.
More of the corrupt system there. Yeah.
Well, this is the most glaring difference between the remake and the original is in the remake, pretty much, or the original, the whole town is affected by this corruption, right?
Yeah.
The sheriff's corrupt. The judge is corrupt. You've got the casino, you've got the moonshining, you've got the whorehouse. All of that sort of plays in. We talked about it earlier. It's an organization, right? And it's permeated the town. Whereas in the remake, it's this casino, and it's affected some of the people in the town, but in a different way. It's the drugs and stuff are affecting the populace, but they're not all corrupted by it.
Yeah. No. Well, part of the problem is, I mean, they do try and weakly to show that the corruption is a little bit more. We see right in the opening as he arrives into town, drug deals are happening in the street. That one lady who abandons her kid for a moment to make a deal in the alley. I'm like, he's seeing this as soon as he walks into town. But we don't really get any more establishment other than the casino stuff.
Yeah, and the only corruption you really see is the police force.
Right.
The police are corrupt.
Yeah, and we're not seeing it as affecting the townspeople as much. When Pooser, in that trial, makes his impassioned plea to the jury... you're a little more convinced, and you can see he's trying to wake these people up at the corruption that they're living in. I'm not sold on that when The Rock does it.
No.
No.
It's a weak plea, and you're not sure what he's arguing for.
Exactly, and rightfully...
And you're seeing people nodding. I'm like, but how is this affecting you
and
people?
In the original, there was cause for him to get off, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he did bust up the casino, which is not a legitimate business anyhow.
No.
Right?
Not at that time.
Not at that time. And he went in there with an intent, and it was very rational, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas in the remake, Chris Vaughn is going in there. It's pure rage.
Yeah. It's really irrational.
It's really irrational.
I mean, he was originally going to go in with a gun.
Yeah.
And at least it had some sense to leave that in the vehicle and the unlocked, rolled down windows vehicle with his gun laying on the... Yes.
So frustrating.
Well, just, let's arm the other citizen.
Yeah.
And then grabs the big board out of there.
And then busts up a legitimate
visual.
Business.
Yeah, that's the big visual in both of them. He has the big 2x4 stick.
And I think it's kind of a play on the walk tall and carry a big stick.
Yeah. Oh, I'm absolutely not.
And it's like when you're saying, when he busts it up, like Buford goes in, like when he's on at the trial and he's talking to these people, he's like, oh, I had a witness, but he's mysteriously dead. Huh. And then he tells him, like, look, this happened to me. I'm cut up. I'm like, it doesn't matter. You think it's not going to touch you? You cross these people one time, this is going to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's
what he's
waking him
up. I want it never happens again.
Yeah. He's like, let me help you.
Yeah. There's a great big difference here. Like, I mean, they follow the story structure fairly closely up until the point, right up to the court, to the court appearance.
Mm-hmm.
It's followed fairly closely. They cut out bits and they've eliminated some characters and added some more. But it's essentially the same up to there. Mm-hmm. And then that's where it changes, right? A little more substantially.
That's the point where he also makes his public declaration to run
for sheriff.
Sheriff.
Yeah. See, I like the idea that, like, Buford, he got out and everybody's, like, really for him. And it's only afterwards where his buddy's like, you should probably run for sheriff. We know how corrupt these guys are. Because he's dealt with it. He's like... He talks, the judge says, well, me and the sheriff can decide how much time you'll spend. And he's like, I'm not an idiot. I'm going to go with the jury because you guys are fucking assholes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. He's not a dumb man.
No.
Buford is definitely not a dumb man. Even though he comes across as sort of your backwards hick wrestler guy, he's very, very intelligent.
Well, yeah, he must be really smart. He learned the justice system in one night.
Yes, that was awesome.
Well, I think he just learned the local rules. Because that's the thing is, like, the sheriff can dictate what the judge's quarters are. So he's,
I love that.
Yeah. But, like, I think these are just sort of what the sheriff can do in his capacity. So that's kind of one book.
Yeah. So, he's allowed to assign judge's quarters. So he assigns them to the lavatory.
In the basement.
Yeah. The basement men's bathroom.
Yeah, he has his choice of seats, as he says.
And, I mean, he sent a clear message to that judge. And I mean, you don't really see the judge after that.
No. Right. Nah, he kind of got what he wanted to do, and the message was sent to him.
Yeah.
And the other bit about, too, he did mention if the judge does something else wrong, he can kick him out. He's like, you can be, I can get rid of you completely if you fuck up.
Initially, when he becomes town sheriff, he makes his first arrests, and everybody's getting off on technicalities. Well, they didn't get their writ written, read. And,
rights
I mean,
read, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The rights read. And other minor infractions, but, I mean, they are in place. The judge wasn't wrong.
See, that's I kind of appreciated that bit of it where I'm like going, it can be so frustrating.
It's frustrating.
But it's not, sometimes it's like the corrupt people will use a legitimate excuse.
Yeah, it wasn't wrong what the judge did, but at the same time, we know why he did it. He is being paid off by these guys. Yeah. So the message was sent like, no, you're going to cooperate. You're going to give me all my warrants that I want, and you're not going to hold me back. Otherwise, you're going to be in the bathroom forever.
Yeah, and he does get the warrants, and that's so the judge is obviously cooperating.
Yeah, and that's when he stops playing in the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, once that character's been turned around, you don't need him anymore.
Well, once that obstacle's gone.
Yeah, and they do that all the time in this movie.
It's
like,
gone.
Once that character doesn't serve a function anymore, they're out.
Yeah, they just disappear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You never really see them again.
No, the cast in the remake is much, much thinner.
Mm-hmm.
And the motivations are as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's still got good, decent motivations, but they're not so pragmatic. They're very rage-induced, and we don't even see the judge come into play in that. He is just... He's doing cowboy justice.
Yeah, and it's sort of, if he's going to be doing this, like, it seems he's in a more precarious position in, like you say, not having a reason to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he probably should have spent some time in jail, you know?
He really should have, because, his motivation for breaking up that casino, as we said, was rage-induced. There was no rational behind it, and it was a criminal act.
Yeah,
and I can see why he fired his lawyer.
He's
a shit lawyer.
Yeah,
he gets off because he says he's going to run for sheriff. But I found it funny. There's one thing that stuck out where people are testifying, like, yeah, and then they were shooting all over the place. I'm like, okay, so you've testified that the wood is his weapon, but there were shots fired. Where the fuck did those come from? If you were a good lawyer, you'd be like, huh, so shots were fired, but he didn't have a gun. That's interesting.
24 caliber piece of 2x4.
Yeah, like, I've been looking at the cedar for a long time. I don't know where the bullets go.
In fact, it's a little chewed up now that he's hit a bunch of slot machines with it.
I don't see a firing pin.
And some people. Don't forget the people.
Oh, don't forget. Yeah. I love that they actually gave it a handle later on in the remake. That was pretty fun. I guess initially they didn't even want him to have the big piece of wood. They wanted to turn it into a baseball bat, which would have been stupid.
Yeah, no, because that's the point. It's got to be bigger than your regular baseball bat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Otherwise, you seem like a gangster. I think that's probably why.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the chunk of cedar, the fact that it was sort of in the back of his truck because he was doing construction, they set that up beautifully, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? The fact that that piece of wood was there and convenient, right?
And it's part of it's a lumber town. Yeah. It's very much a statement.
It really becomes a symbol. You know, in the remake, the lumberyard, that's he returns from military service in the remake, and he's going to get a job at the lumberyard, which has been closed down in favor of the casino.
Yeah, for 3 years.
Yeah, it's been closed for 3 years while he was gone. By the end, it's been reopened.
I don't know.
No, I don't know. I'm not sure how the economy works over there, how he got reopened by closing the town casino.
Especially considering that the lumber mill and all the property it stands on is owned by Jay, the guy he just put in jail.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Unless somehow...
Seized his assets?
Yeah.
That's one thing. Unless his assets were like divested to become public property of the town.
Yeah. That's the only way I can see that working. But I mean, that's a little off point, but it was one of those things that bugged me about the remake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do have to figure it out.
There were a lot of things that bugged me about the remake and that just... very Hollywood-y.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And I mean, given the fact that it is one of The Rock's first features and it was WWE. I mean, it's still a fun film, but when you, after watching the original, it just makes those changes and those Hollywoodisms that much more glaring.
Oh, sure. Oh, like the sex scene with Denny in the,
what?
In the sheriff's place while they've got Booth, Kevin Durant, locked up. Yeah,
and see that...
I didn't realize how big that guy was.
Kevin Durant's huge.
Kevin Durant is giant.
He's always plays big, heavies.
I know, but just, I never... like seeing him against The Rock really gave me perspective on how big he really is.
Actually,
that's why I keep casting him in things. Yeah. That's what I do.
Well, if you ever see him in the more recent stuff, he's even bigger now.
Like, yeah, he's filled
put on
out.
He's put on a lot of muscle.
Yeah, he's a big leaner. Boy.
Yeah. Yeah, but just the perspective, because I know that The Rock's like 6'2 or 6'3, so he's a big, and then you see him like towering over him, so he's got to be pushing 6'8, 6'9.
Yeah. I'm going to let you guys think on this. This is also the debut of another actress in this film, and I'm going to let you think about who that was while I run the trailer.
War hero Chris Vaughn has returned home.
Get tired of being all that you could be?
No, I'm still all I can be.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
But the town he thought he knew
isn't exactly home anymore.
Has lost its innocence.
Welcome to my world.
It was crystal meth.
Where'd you get the drugs?
From the guys at the casino.
I'm not gonna let this stand.
I'm the sheriff here. I'll tell you what'll stand.
Now, one man won't back down.
Guess that changes our relationship a bit, huh?
Whoever did this left him for dead.
The sheriff's up for re-election. Then we could take his job.
What's the problem, Sheriff?
Get your taillights fixed.
What's wrong with my taillights?
They're broken.
You're gonna get hurt. Stand up.
Do it.
Sheriff, are you home?
Fight back. The Rock.
This is my town.
All right, we are back. Now, do you have an answer to that question? Who was in this movie?
We both do.
Okay.
Both do. Should we say it at the same time?
Go ahead.
Let's go.
Kobe Smulders.
Yes, where?
In the car with Jay.
Yes. And her only dialogue was a laugh.
When Chris Vaughn pulls Jay over and they have their little dialogue.
Yeah, because I was looking at her like, she looks familiar. And then I saw her laugh and I saw like her outline of her face and I'm like, damn it, I know who that is.
Yes, yes, that was her first feature.
Nice.
In a non-speaking role.
Yep. Yeah, no, I love the whole bit because it just the way it all happens, right? It's just you get your taillights fixed because they're broken, and then she laughs after he breaks them. It's like, that was funny. Yep. It actually, it was a laugh.
Yeah, she made her little extras moment count, and now she's Maria Hill and all this Marvel stuff, so.
I know.
Another Marvel connection here.
Yeah, we got three of them in this movie we decided during the...
Yeah.
The trailer there. We have Kevin Durand, who was...
He was the blob in the second Wolverine film.
Yeah.
She's obviously Maria Hill and Dum Dum Dugan.
Yep. Lots of Marvel going on here. Lots so Wolverine Marvel. Should have just showed up at some point.
Oh, well.
He is Canadian.
That would end this movie a lot faster.
Oh, and another Marvel connection? No, he's DC. We get it.
What? We could still
the Rock's it. The Rock's going to be playing...
He's
going to
be playing Black Adam.
Black Adam, yeah.
Okay, but that's DC.
Yeah. Potentially.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah, because they've been talking about that for a while, and nothing seems to be moving, so...
No, he always seems to be shooting something else.
He'd be really good at... Well, like, man, he's a machine. Yeah. He's just constantly shooting now.
Oh, yeah. He's not unbusy.
But for a guy who's used to being on the road with WWE, this is probably pretty relaxed for him.
Yeah, he probably... yeah. In a lot of cases, he gets to go home and go into his own bed, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. He just goes from shoot to shoot to shoot, so he doesn't sit still very well.
And he also probably might be like, I need to get, I'll get a bunch of this under my belt, and then...
Yeah. Well, he must, like, act. I don't know how long he's on set. They must give him a gym or something, because he's obviously just working out all the time. He's not acting, so...
True. But he also might be thinking, like, I'm going to get older, so maybe I better, you know, get some more acting.
Well... If
go action, on to more thoughtful roles.
It seems like you can be an action star well into your 70s, apparently.
Yeah. Let's stop that.
Yeah. Right? Okay, you wanted to go back to the jailhouse sex scene.
Oh, the jailhouse sex scene. I was like, fucking gross. Like, I just, that bugged the shit out of me.
I think it was mainly so they could shoot up the jail with her top off the whole time.
Yes.
And so she's running around in a bra.
That was all it was for.
I mean,
like,
I'd say for the short time she's in this movie, most of the time she's half naked.
And to me...
She's not naked, but we see a lot of her body.
To me, that wasn't even, like, remotely sexy. Like, when I think of the original, the only kind of remotely sexy thing is, like, when she's... Buford and his wife are just, like, on that picnic blanket and just kissing him. Like, that's...
And the kids are going, sexy and chuggling.
And that's sexy and romantic. Yeah. I love that. That's more... That's much better than that whole stupid sex scene.
Yeah,
I have to agree. I mean, it's creepy too. I mean, there's a prisoner
within
hearing distance.
Yeah.
But that let's go back to Kevin Durant's character because there's that great scene, and I really wish Johnny Knoxville would do more movies because he's great in everything he's in. I love him in Men in Black. I love him in this. Maybe not so much the stuff where he leads, but as a supporting character,
he's a good supporting character. Yeah. He's a little goofy in The Last Stand, but.
See, that I keep was thinking.
Just a few years ago.
Every time I look at him, Johnny Knoxville, I want to see him in a Christmas movie because every time I look at him, I'm like, he's an elf and he needs an elf hat, and that's what he needs.
Well, I think Knoxville is probably his own worst enemy when it comes to his career.
Oh, yeah,
sure.
So I think that's why he kind of comes and goes at times, lets people forget. Yeah. I think hopefully he's well past the Jackass stage, but I also hear that is catching up with him health-wise, too.
Yeah, well, inevitably it will.
He's got a lot of complications from those early days.
You can only do it so long.
Yeah. But I was mentioning him specifically because of the scene where they tear apart the truck.
Oh, God, he was having so much fun tearing about.
And so was I, watching
it. That's a good scene, good montage of just... The Rock and Johnny Knoxville carving up Kevin Durant's vehicle. It's a really nice truck.
Yeah, it's tricked out to the nines.
Yeah, I mean, he's the heavy for the casino, so he's probably making some pretty good bang.
Well, he's also a drug dealer, so he's making money. But it looks, to me, I think part of the fun of that is it looks fun.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
who hasn't wanted to just destroy shit?
They're torturing him basically to get info about where the drugs are coming from, where they're being manufactured. They don't know, and that's what they're trying to shut down is where the drugs are.
Yeah.
He's the main guy, but he's not talking. He doesn't talk any time during the drug thing with the truck. They're technically looking for drugs on the truck. They just don't find any.
Yeah,
because, and they know they're not going to. They're
just fucking with them.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to get him to speak up. Right. They're using it as a device to get him to confess to more knowledge.
But it really just looks fun.
Yeah.
It really looks fun.
And but it doesn't work. And then we get that sex scene in the jail a little bit later on, and after that, they're attacked. by a bunch of more of Jay's men.
No.
By the former sheriff?
The former sheriff and all the deputies.
Yeah, the sheriff and the deputies.
After being fired, which was awesome.
I like that the main deputy in the original film became his deputy. Because you can tell he's reluctant in all of this. This is my job, and it sucks.
Yeah.
I love that redemption of Grady, like at the end, where like he really steps up, and I'm like, I've grown to love Grady. By the end, I was really happy.
Yeah. Well, and in most movies, he makes his best friend a deputy.
But in the remake, there's only one deputy, just the two of them. Whereas in the original, most of the deputies are kept on because that plays a very important plot device. Because one of them is still crooked and is ratting them out. And that's what one of the things I missed in the remake too is the fact that in the original, there's a passage of time, right? There's this sort of history of him busting up their operations, right? Mm-hmm. And their attempts to get to him, which is how his wife dies. He gets shot again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like he's spent a lot of time injured.
He gets shot twice before the final moments of the film.
Yeah, and by the final moments of the film, which is his wife's funeral, his jaw is in a cast.
Which I guess is how they used to do broken jaws back then, which looks like it might not heal right if you do it that way.
Yeah. Oh, he went through, in real life, I think he went through 6 or 8 surgeries just to get his face looking right again.
Well, you'd have to, nowadays they wire him shut so that everything is...
Well, I think it was more the case that it's a gunshot shatter, right?
True.
So there's probably not much holding it in place to begin with.
Yeah. But I mean, you'd still, they do, nowadays they'd have more precise surgery. They could wire it together.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, but back then, I mean, he looked like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, it was weird. Although when he's at the funeral and he goes to his son and I didn't know what he said initially. I had to rewind a couple of times and he's speaking through this cast. He's get stick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because he's gonna go back to the plate because he knows who shot him.
Yeah,
so
it's end game for him now.
Yeah, it's end game. Yeah.
Yeah,
well, he's lost almost everything. He's like, fine, I'll take everything out. He's like, at that point, he doesn't even care if he goes to jail.
He could barely stand to begin with, but he was smart in the fact that he just took his cop car and drove right into the place.
That was hilarious.
Yeah, so it just took out the two guys.
Yeah, the one guy is like going to be all tough. He comes out with his gun, and he does not just even gets leave.
He doesn't hit the brakes.
Nope.
No, right in.
Yeah, he's ready for a fight. He comes out. He can barely stand, but he's going to fight, and then nobody comes.
Yeah, because he took them both out with the car, which was fortuitous.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not the most action packed ending, but it's good. Like it gets you going just for that moment. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah,
but then you have the final. A note of the ending, whereas all these other cars come and it's all the local people.
Yeah.
And they're done with it all.
Yeah. And he has some doubts. Like, he's been shutting all this down, but doesn't seem to be getting a lot of support from the town. And he's starting to think, well, you know,
what's the point now?
What's the point? You know, maybe I am just a crazy dude who's stubborn.
Yeah. I've lost my wife. I could lose my kids next. Like, that's probably exactly what's
going to happen. And they do rally behind him. And then when he does that, the whole town, they just start tearing that joint apart and making a bonfire.
Yeah. They bring the stuff out and make a bonfire. I'm like, nah, leave it in there. Just burn it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they might be able to use the building for something else.
Yeah, and I think that was the rationale is, you know, the building serves a purpose, but the stuff inside it doesn't.
It's tainted.
Yeah. Right. I mean, we missed the scene where he shoots the madame.
Oh, no. We should.
To be fair, she was asking for it.
There's a lot of baiting by the bad guys in this movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, that call that gets his wife killed, it was what seemed to be a standard disturbance. He thought that somebody else was building a still again. He was just going to go out and read the riot act. The wife's like, I want to see what my husband does. And even from that moment, you're probably like, you're not coming home.
Poor decision.
That sucks. And that was a baiting to get him on the road. They know where he's going because, you know, they called it in, so he's going to have to take this road, and that's where the ambush happens.
Yeah.
And something similar happens where he's called to the... Was it a casino / whorehouse, I think it was?
The casino and whorehouse were separate.
Yeah. I love how... because all the girls were screwing in trailers.
Yeah, well, it's a truck stop operation
It was a neat setup. They could just pull it out at any time. I love when he goes on the raids, and those were really funny because they all knew when he was coming because of the guy, the plant in the police department. So, you know, they have some old grandma knitting in one of the trailers.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When everybody at the Black Speakeasy was drinking milk.
Yes.
That was hilarious. He comes in and they all raise their glasses of milk. I'm like, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, I love the sense of humor that it did bring, those brief moments where there was some humor.
Yeah.
It was all very witty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sense of humor and whimsy is certainly missing from the remake, and that's too bad because The Rock's really good at stuff like that.
Yeah.
That scene with them tearing the truck apart is really the only really funny scene.
Bit of levity.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the one bit, like I say, when his first day on the job where he walks in and the sheriff's introducing him and vouching for the man, he's like, you're all fired, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. He just walks right in.
Yeah.
They tried to make a little comedy montage when he's recovering on the couch,
which I
did not enjoy. It just fell flat.
Yeah, with the nephew and he's.
And then Johnny Knoxville laughing about something?
Yeah, but I feel like they cut that too hard.
Yeah.
Well, there was a play because they were watching something funny and The Rock starts to laugh and he can't laugh because his stomach hurts because of all the stitches, right? And Johnny won't stop laughing because it was that
hurts
funny.
The Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, see, I did not get that at all.
Yeah, you must have missed that brief moment where he starts to laugh and then he's like, winces in pain.
Or is this poorly put together? Yeah. Anyway.
It wasn't the greatest montage in the world, no.
But I like the play between having somebody on the inside on both sides, like that they had in the original. Like they had the one corrupt deputy who was still on the take, but he also had that woman who was on the inside and helping him out.
Yeah, the prostitute who was helping him out, yeah.
Yes, the one that's always was hitting on him, but looking's free.
But see, I thought that was a really amazing thing. And at the end, when she talks about him, he said, I wish I could do more. He's like, you could, but then you wouldn't be the man you are.
Well, and I think that's where Denny's character came from. I think that comes more from her.
It's supposed to be, but it's not.
Oh, no, it's not
flat. Perfect.
Yeah, it's a pointless part. But I think that's what they were trying to do, was build up that character that
in
works
the absence of his wife of his spouse,
and it doesn't work.
No, they didn't even build her up. They took away less. She quit her job and didn't even do anything.
I'd like to see what the original script had and see what maybe didn't get shot with her, because I mean, if you're going to do that, where's anything really? Yeah.
Having her stay on the inside and maybe having them have a slightly antagonistic relationship because the breakup was bad or something would have been better.
Yeah, well. She's stripping, sees him there, makes a house call at one point when he's injured. She goes to visit him at the jail. That's when they have sex, and she says she's quit. I mean, nothing's motivating this character outside of like, I'll get with him because he'll be happy that I'm not working there.
Yeah.
And really, it just feels like, well, she's just trying to overtly win him back, and that's her function.
Yeah.
And it's too bad because they had a good vehicle there to use her as a plant within there to learn more about the organization.
She really does seem to be a sore point about this remake. But I mean, even the very first time you see her, it feels wrong and out of place in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, yeah.
Because first off, you don't really see The Rock or that character sort of really getting off on sort of a peep show, right? And he seems to be, right? Like, he's kind of enjoying it in a very overt manner.
Mm-hmm. Until he sees her face.
Yeah. And even then, I mean, he kind of cracks a grin and he kind of gets off on the fact that he sees her in this low position.
Yeah.
Which is just gross.
Yeah.
People and their exes.
Yeah, well, I suppose. Yeah,
but then there's she's just this vacuous thing, which is upsetting.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like there could have been more there, and it's just
I think that if anything, he should have been looked like he was uncomfortable with the whole situation. Then when he finds out, it just makes him that much more uncomfortable. I would have felt that was more in line with the character.
Yeah, yeah. And every time we see something corrupt in the original film, like, we really see his distaste for it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And The Rock just isn't good at about emoting that. He just is kind of deadpan and, I'm not going to react to this.
Yeah, it's sort of like there's that baseline of flat, and then you get little peaks. There's never really above or below.
Well, I guess it's The Rock. He's not good at selling.
True. No, like you say, this is one of his first roles. Like, I mean, this is really just learning. Yeah, I don't know. I just I feel the script probably could have helped out a bit more, and it didn't.
And I think the director was he's an action director, and his forte is directing those action scenes. Speaking of action scenes,
there's
lots of them in this movie, and the climax was really anticlimactic.
Yeah, you know, the big fight in the mill. Mm-hmm. Once we get the shootout at the sheriff's place. Mm-hmm. And they're getting really wild with their shots. And Kevin Durant's actually, is his character, Booth, is also in jeopardy at this point because his boys aren't realizing where they're shooting. And now he's...
They don't care.
Oh, and no, he's so expendable.
Yeah, so now he's like, oh, he's ready to squeal. Just get me the fuck out of here. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, the sheriff's place is essentially just a bunch of trailers that have been built into a building quickly.
It's like a mobile classroom that's...
Yeah,
he's just... the poor guy, he's like that. He's like, I'm not expendable. Oh, wait, I am expendable. Because I think on certain levels, he thinks they're here for him.
Yeah.
And they're not. Because they can see him yelling out the window. They know he's there.
He's cheering them on. And then that just lets them know that, oh, there's somebody to shoot at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they knew he was there anyhow, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, they were told that he was expendable, and if they hit,
well, yeah, because he knows about the operation, and he's kill him, and there's nobody to squeal.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, kill him or get him out, but either way, he can't talk, right?
Yeah,
yeah. If you get him out, kill him later.
Yeah.
We don't know.
And he talks just in time before taking a bullet.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so that's when they learn that the operation's at the mill, and the only guy there is Jay.
Yeah.
Like, wait, what?
See, yeah, there should have been more people.
Right?
If you're making drugs, this is not Breaking Bad.
Doing it himself?
Even in Breaking Bad, he needs a partner.
Where's his guards? Where's the guy making it? I didn't even see the drug setup. It was a mill.
Yeah,
well, looked like a mill.
There was a lab sort of wrapped in sort of around these plastic sheets, right? And he actually walks through it, but. Yeah. But and at what point does Jay think that he's going to be able to take on a trained Marine one-on-one?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I found really unbelievable is the capability of Jay to fight as long and hard as he did against a trained Marine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the whole thing. It's his arrogance, but it's also because, well, the script says the bad guy has to last this long.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think it would have been a lot more entertaining end game if there were more...
Oh yeah, he should have had guards. Yeah. He should have had the lab should have been a working lab.
Yeah,
like he shouldn't have just been sitting around there, mustache twirling.
Well, exactly. Like, especially considering he's expecting Vaughn to be dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
Why is he even there?
Yeah.
And with Vaughn, when you're talking about like him lashing out long against the Marine, what would be better is you had like a whole action sequence with, like you say, more guards and stuff. So like at this point, the Rock is tired and stuff. But also Jay is not going to fight fair. Like it's a dirty, dirty fight. Like he does really some shady shit.
Yeah, the
and
only
that would be
thing
good.
That worked really well there is they set up the scene where Vaughn's got the bad knee.
Yeah.
Right.
In the football game.
Yeah.
And then you see
that
Jay play on that during the final fight scene where he takes out his knee, which is dirty pool.
Well, but, and he did try to trap him and then with the active machinery and was hopefully going to use that trap into dispatching him quickly. Yeah. Like, why didn't he just have a fucking gun?
I know.
Booster gets shot a lot.
Yes.
This guy already thinks he's completely above the law. Like, he's got... These guys are no longer sheriffs and they're no longer deputies and they have automatic weapons. That is automatically... that shouldn't happen. They're pretty shady. But like, why doesn't he have a gun? He's a bad guy. Why wouldn't he? Why does he care?
Yeah.
And I mean, certainly. Yeah. And I mean, he's portrayed with a lot of arrogance. He's a very, very arrogant man. And you're given the impression that he was arrogant even as a teenager and a young man.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But that arrogance didn't play right at the end because he's not the type of guy who would leave himself defenseless.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the reluctance to use the gun in both movies.
Mm-hmm.
Now in the original movie, he was given a rifle at the age of 9, which is
normal.
I guess more of a normal small town thing, right? You know,
yeah.
She's looking at us and like, well, that's normal.
A rifle at 9 driving in the fields at 7. It's fine.
They're practical
tools.
You can
tell I'm a city boy.
Yeah. I mean, you're in the middle of a field. What are you going to hit?
Now, he doesn't use the gun mainly because of his wife, who's very anti-firearms. During the majority of this movie until fairly close to the end. And still kind of reluctant, but starts seeing the need. Like, their 9-year-old son on his birthday, or at Christmas, gets a gun.
Yeah.
So... the traditions passed on. But he's very he's honoring his wife's wishes for the most part. So
at risk to himself.
At risk to himself, because he initially wants to use it and doesn't, and has that big stick and uses that as symbol for quite a ways in the movie before they finally just put the gun belt around his waist. Like, no.
Yeah, he's laying on the couch.
The second time he's shot, she gives him the gun.
She gives him the gun.
Because Grady finally kind of appeals to her, like, look, the stick is fine, but against a gun, it's not going to work. You have to figure out what you want. Do you want to live in fear, or you want to live with your husband who's alive?
Yeah, it was a great line.
Yeah.
Great
and
line.
It's the thing is, and he says he has a line at the beginning of the film. I'm like, a gun is fine in the right hands. Like, he seems like I say, you get a gun, like, you learn to shoot when you're 9. Mm-hmm. But as a kid, you are taught a very, very, very healthy respect for that firearm.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a toy. It is never a toy. You never point it at anybody you don't want to shoot. Like, you always assume it's loaded.
Yeah.
Yes, and I mean, it played really well into the whole film.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, that line was amazing. And it's a good subplot. It's a bit of a sore point between him and his wife. Mm-hmm. And that does have a payoff. Now, that anti-gun thing kind of carries over into the remake between him and his father.
Mm-hmm.
Between Vaughn and Vaughn Sr. But we don't know why.
Exactly.
Yeah, really I never got explained.
Yeah, there seems to be this underlying thing. His dad has put down the gun, and this is a part of his past. He doesn't want to talk about it. He wants anything to do with it. And they even mentioned something about melting the gun down.
Well, and there's a point before that even where they talk about how his father disagreed with his career choice of going into the Marines.
Yeah.
Right? But there's no explanation as to why it bothered him so much.
Yeah. We never find out the whys to any of that.
See, yeah. Like, what would have been made more sense if there had been a subplot where he had also served in the military. And that was because he'd seen so much crap go down. He's like, I really don't want to hold a gun or shoot anybody ever again.
Yeah. There just
that would make sense.
Yeah. You need to give us some motivation. And Jesus, that's just an extra line for crying out loud. Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's just not there. So, you know, every now and again, he has this reaction to grab the gun, but then grabs the piece of wood, piece of cedar out of the back of the truck. And that becomes his thing. But he never picks up a gun again during the whole movie.
No. Yes, he does.
Does he?
The shotgun at the sheriff's.
Oh, yes, yeah. Right near the end.
Yeah, because he has to.
Yeah.
And see, that could have been a point where I feel Denny, it would have been funny. I would have found it funny. But where he's like, he tells her, just shoot randomly. I'm like, no, if he tells her to just shoot, he wasn't specific. I would have liked it if she took it up, taken out at least one or two guys. Be like, you said shoot. And he's like, I just meant just randomly. Oh, my mistake.
Yeah,
didn't realize I wasn't supposed to shoot them.
Yes, because you'd think that she would know how to use a gun, and being in from the small town, right? Yeah. like we're just talking about, right?
I think that would have been hilarious. Yeah. Just like, I didn't mean to shoot someone.
It would have made her a lot more interesting if she was a competent shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah. She exists to be a distraction.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. In the movie, and
her
just
her big thing was to be a distraction.
Like, that's her purpose in life. That's her existence, apparently, in this movie. So frustrating.
Yeah, and through no fault of the actress. It's not her fault, not the actress.
This is poor writing.
Yeah,
and bad direction.
But you know, early in her career, you take what you get, right?
Yep.
Yeah, but I do like how it's used to like get that guy where he's not thinking. And he gets him. That sheriff had to go.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, we should actually talk about both those sheriffs too.
Yeah.
Well, the thing in the remake,
we kind of have touched on them,
and I mean the sheriff in the remake. I mean, aside from very obviously being corrupt, really does play like you don't see the level.
He didn't seem that bad until he tried to kill everybody.
It shows out of after nowhere. After he loses with the
election, and the election, we never see anything with the election
in either movie.
We see him doing a little bit of the campaigning, and that's when the sheriff tries to drive him off the road and dies. But in this one, he says, "I'm going to run for town sheriff. And then the next scene, he's sheriff.
He's putting
the deck.
They at least give you a little bit more in the original where he's asleep and you hear this honking. And at that point, I'm like, oh my God, they're coming to kill him. And they're not. he's become sheriff. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Really bit of misdirect. It was good.
I don't know why he'd be sleeping if he's waiting for election results, but
I don't know. He might just be thinking, like, I don't know. Either way, I might have to get up early to get out of town or I might have to get up early and have a new job.
Yeah. Well, and I would think there was some lost opportunities, especially in the remake, if he's announced he's going to run. There should be some antagonistic stuff happening on the sheriff's end.
Yes.
And we don't see it.
Yeah, we don't see it because the sheriff in this doesn't really seem corrupt right until he shows up with the guys with the guns. Mostly, he just seems like the kind of sheriff who just turns a blind eye to this stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? His level of corruption isn't very clear.
In fact, he's pretty damn friendly at the beginning. Yeah. He offers to, before he knows who Vaughn is, he's like, oh, what you doing up here? And just asks some basic questions and recommends going to the casino, got to drum up business, and then realizes because of his military bag with his name on it, oh, you're Vaughn's son, I'll give you a ride up there.
Yeah.
And initially, The Rock doesn't even want to take the ride, but I like the fact that it looked like he was going to draw on The Rock.
I know.
Get in the car.
Yeah.
I did like that goofy moment, but I also thought it was because he had that one deputy with him, I thought it was going to be the same arc where the deputy was going to become his friend, and that didn't happen, and that made me sad.
And which would have been nice,
right?
I would have liked to have seen sort of something like that where this, especially after Vaughn gets cut up, right? He gets all carved up, that deputy sort of comes by and says, you know what? I know what happened to you was wrong. There's nothing I can do about it.
Ooh.
That would have been a great way to sort of establish that not every cop is corrupt.
Yeah.
Yes, and because there was one thing. He's sort of there overhearing when he's like, I won't let this stand. Mm-hmm. But the funny thing is the sheriff was like, well, you know, they're going to do internal investigation. I don't think anything happened. I'm like, and then he says the other lines like, look, you're alive now, so just concentrate on that. Like, so he almost died, but nothing happened. Mm-hmm. What's wrong here?
Yeah.
Well, there's a moment that reminds me of back to the original film during the campaigning moment, and he's in that club, the black club, and these drunk guys pull in and start harassing the sheriff. They're drunk and just
the deputy sheriff.
Yeah. And the deputy's there. The sheriff's there. It comes a little bit later, and the deputy's the one that arrests him. And there's a nice arc there about proving himself as a deputy. So, because initially, Pooser's just, well, deal with it. That's your job.
Yeah, which is a valid point.
Yeah, and he takes a shellacking, but he gets them all out.
True.
And this is where one of those moments with the judge, where the judge basically lets him off with a slap on the wrist. They $10 fine. But the lead guy, through that whole thing, it looks like he's going to come back after the trial and do something. He comes back up and pushing his buddies away, and he comes up and he says, I was wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, well, that's a good moment. Like, somebody learned from this.
I love that so much. And then he's like, I'll give you $20 for the shirt. He's like, that's all I can do right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just twice or more is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like both Pusser and I can't remember the other guy's name in the movie. They're just gobsmacked. They're looking at this guy like, wait, this is an apology? What the hell?
It's a great way of showing how what he's doing is affecting change in the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And you don't really see that in the remake.
No. There's all these little things. Like, there's a reason why the original is as long as it is, because we're seeing how it's affecting the town.
Yeah.
And how it's affecting other people and how much they were getting caught up in the atmosphere of the corruption, and that maybe these guys aren't all that bad and need to be pulled back into what they were.
Yeah, and realizing that the sheriff that they elected really did mean what he said.
Yeah,
right. He fully intended to stop this corruption and make sure that people were treated fairly in this community.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, and it can also be like a hint to like where you find this often when like the community goes down because there's all this corruption and things just go bad, like the economy takes a downturn, and there's like this hopelessness, and like maybe that he's giving these people a bit of hope, and they're like, okay, so maybe tomorrow will come, so I better not be so much of an asshole right now.
Yeah, well, and in the remake, I mean, he's been sheriff for what, 3 days?
That's it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was abbreviated. I mean, let's put it.
Oh, I mean, it's stripped down to its basic skeletal structure is what it's been done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it really the remake was
the most Hollywood version of what the original story actually was.
Yeah, yeah, it was exactly. It's stripped down to action scenes tied together by the original story in pieces. Yeah,
pun fully intended, but it was a rocky start.
I like that.
That's two, Jay.
It's two.
That's two today.
It is.
It's okay.
Who's got the puns? I got the puns.
The puns.
I got all the puns you want. Going cheap.
Yeah. So puntastic. We got big buns. We got little buns. We got small buns. We got medium buns.
Oh, I have a barker, too.
We got lateral puns. We got obscure puns. We've got...
But they're all bad. Puns are bad.
Yeah,
I'm not stopping.
Puns are okay. Like, I don't know. There's some wordplay that's really, really good.
Wordplay? Yes, it can be really good. But yeah, just... Yeah, let's not even start this discussion.
Yeah.
Not only is it off topic, but it'll just go on forever.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can tell me your bad puns over at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook, or invasiontheremake@gmail.com.
Yes.
Puns are,
walking
more puns or less. You tell us.
Puns with
hashtag puns forever.
Yes. Pun friends. Puns are us.
I'm sorry. I'm just going to be quiet.
Sam's protesting silently. It's an audio podcast. Shut up. Just stop it.
I'm sure they can tell that I'm not talking, so. And they know there must be a reason for it.
Well, any last thoughts about these two films here?
I like them both. I like for different reasons.
I do too. Where I feel like the original Walking Tall may not be the best shot film, and certainly has some really strange things happening in the action choreography, as we discussed. Mm-hmm. It's not the most well made film, but it's definitely the more well written of the two films.
It's certainly a lot more difficult to watch. Like I saw it probably 20 years ago, and then rewatching it now. I probably won't watch it again for another 20 years if I ever see it again, because it is such a challenging watch.
This was a first for me for seeing the original. I'd seen the original or the remake one before. I got to say, I was fairly impressed with Joan Don Baker in this.
Yes,
I'd never seen him that thin before, and young and fresh faced. I was used to him in these older roles as politicians and that fun guy in the Bond movies, but. But his cheeks, man, those cheeks, he's got a smile, and I'm like, I can see where they cast him. Cause in his younger days, like he's this very tall guy, fairly imposing guy. And he's really good with his face.
Yes.
And Sam was saying before the podcast, and he always says the good stuff before the podcast,
but that's what I really enjoyed his portrayal in this, because like you say, he's a big, strong, imposing guy, but there's all these moments throughout the film where he's like, he's a gentle, tender-hearted guy.
Kill
his dog and he is bawling, like he loses his wife and like he's broken, like he's tender with his kids.
We see him, like, a lot of strengths of as an actor. We see a lot of ups and downs in his character and the things he has to deal with and the traumas. And he's very capable. We don't really get that with The Rock.
No.
It's Smiling Rock and Angry Rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad to see that he's definitely gotten better at showing a wider range of emotion.
Yeah.
But again, part of it, I'm sure, has a lot to do with direction.
Yeah. Oh, did you catch the Johnny Knoxville when he was defending the family? Did the people's elbow?
I didn't catch that.
What's the people's elbow?
That's his finishing move.
That's The Rock finishing move. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, right after he creams the guy with the frying pan.
Yeah, and then does the drops the elbow.
Oh, I didn't know that was a thing. I noticed it, but I didn't know that was a thing. But
I want to talk about, before we sign off, I want to talk about the kitchen fight scene, because
I have stuff to say.
I love the after thing. You stabbed me with a potato peeler.
That was good. Yeah, Johnny Knoxville got the best fight, because he's using whatever's around and stabs this guy with a potato peeler.
Don't forget, he'd already been shot in the leg when during this fight scene.
I love that he stabbed him with a potato peeler, and then the guy comes back. You stabbed me with a potato peeler.
It is reasonable to ask. But that's the thing. He's trying to defend this family. He's like, I just got to take this guy down. I really don't care what has to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. He is like the least qualified to be a deputy. And he points all that out to Chris Vaughn.
He says, I'm a convicted felon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a former addict.
Yeah.
I mean, but that was why you hired him on. It was to mainly deal with the drug trade within the
town. It was somebody that Vaughn trusted.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. Right. He trusted him a lot, and with good reason, and he also knew how the whole thing worked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who better? Oh, the other thing I would say, okay, I the original, huge fan, loved it. Thought it was the best thing ever.
Hired for very similar reasons as well.
Arduous.
He was very much a proponent of the black movement, but it was like, well, practice what you preach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it was, in the original, we didn't talk about the one thing where there's that girl getting tortured. And he gets called in because the other woman gives him a call to try and get him to go save her. Mm-hmm. And he starts beating up the pimp guy. And the other lady who's in charge, Callie or whatever, she's like, stop it. I'm like, wait, you just watch them beat the shit out of this girl. And he's just punching your boyfriend up. Quite frankly, he should just keep going.
Yes.
But he kicks these guys' asses.
Oh, yeah.
But in the remake, I do appreciate them sort of beefing up his mom. Like, his mom has more of a presence in this movie. I loved her. I thought she was good.
Yeah, she was pretty good.
And I thought it was so funny. There's one thing that struck me, and I don't know, I don't have kids, but it must be really jarring when you're like, you're a woman and you've given birth to like this kid, right? It used to be a tiny little thing, and now it's this giant person, and you're the tiny one.
Yeah, we could ask my wife about that.
It's got to be weird.
Yeah, her son's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, he's 6'3", so...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be just a very weird thing when you're like, I remember when you were little.
I suppose my mom can relate, too, but it's not that I'm really tall or anything. It's just, like, she's really short.
True. Same thing with my mom. My tower over
tiny.
Her.
Yeah. I'm barely average height myself.
I don't know. It just must be weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was my only other note. Okay. I just thought it was really cool.
Good sidebar. Well, if you enjoy this podcast, each and every week we give you hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of content every month, absolutely free. All we ask of you is spread the word.
Yes.
Spread the word. Tell people how to find the show. Retweet us. Repost us on your social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you happen to hang out. Tell everybody about us. And you can also tell them how to find the show. If you're listening, you already know. But a lot of people don't. And we are on a ton of platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Blueberry, TuneIn Radio, Audio frickin Boom.
Frickin' YouTube.
Audio Boom and frickin' YouTube. Frickin' YouTube. I don't know why I censor that, but frickin' YouTube.
Because it's fun to say frickin'.
It is.
Frickin' is, I don't know. There's a little bit of a spin on frickin' where it's just, you're just so upset by it that you can't even do the whole fuck.
I don't have a fuck to give.
There you go. Yeah, you, I'm out of fucks, so the fricks are all I've got.
Fricks are all you can get right now. I'm all out of fucks.
We need to make that t-shirt. Copyright right now.
Yeah, fricks.
Copyright version of the remake.
Frick. I can't believe it's not fuck.
Oh, we got a whole series of them now.
We're coming soon, the frickin' store. The frickin' store on invasionoftheremake.com.
Nice. We have to do this.
Yeah, I think we might have to, yeah. So, you know, spread the word.
Yeah, give us a reason to make the t-shirts.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you like that idea and you like the episodes that we do, leave us a comment, corrections, suggestions.
Yeah.
We also would really appreciate you leaving us a 5-star rating on iTunes and a short review there as well. These go a long way into helping others find the show as well. So drop us those 5 stars. Leave a couple sentences. It takes no time at all, and it helps us out immensely.
Exactly. And like, if you know something about either of these films that we didn't cover, or maybe we don't even know.
Are you going to silently watch, or are you going to walk tall?
Yeah.
Nicely done.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm making up for the puns.
Yeah,
thank you.
Here we go.
Well, all right. That was Walking Tall. We are on the quick march to episode 100.
Yeah.
We have a good lineup for episode 100 and 101, which is what would mark our 2-year anniversary. So it'll be 100 episodes, and 101 will be our 2-year anniversary. So we got some special episodes coming up, and we're going to continue bringing lots of big films in that march to episode 100. So stay tuned and make sure you tell everybody about the show, because we've got some good stuff coming up. And maybe some surprises coming up in August as well. So
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh. I didn't know any surprises. Cool.
Sometimes the surprises aren't just for them.
Yeah, exactly.
We might actually have an interview coming up on the prior episode from a director of one of our remakes.
Oh, yes. Yes. You did mention that.
I told you.
Yeah.
Yay. So, you did tell me, yes. Yeah, we're still trying to iron that out, but stay tuned to our August, September episodes. I don't know when that will actually air, but we probably won't be rolling that recording out until August because Trish is going to be in Ireland.
Yeah.
So
I'm taking off. I got to go. I got some drinking to do, guys.
And she's going to the source.
Yep, going to the source. I as a Canadian, like I've been there once before. And as a Canadian, I thought I could drink. This is really just like going to the Olympics. I've been training for a long time, but I don't know if I'm good enough to go pro.
You're going from the amateur to the pros.
You do have an advantage because we are well above sea level, whereas they are not. So you do have an upper hand in that regard.
I do.
They may be harder drinkers, but you have that elevation down to sea level kind of thing. So you are going to at least have a lot more tolerances. Natural tolerances just because you're an Albertan.
Nice. Okay. I will look into that. I will make sure that I make that part of it.
But, you know, you don't have to exercise these powers that I've made you aware of.
True.
But, we do want you to come back alive.
But, you know, hey, science, let's do this. Plus, we're going to take a look at some castles, see if some places are haunted. Yeah. It's going
to
be fun.
Oh, that's great. I love haunted stuff, so... Hopefully you'll come back with some tales. You're not going to be with us next week, but I think you're going to try to Skype in from Ireland the week after.
Yeah. Well, one of the 2 weeks, we'll iron it out. But for sure, I want to Skype in and tell you all about it.
Okay. That sounds awesome. So, see? Special shit coming up.
Yeah.
We're going to have, like, a remote from Ireland. How cool is that?
Who knows? If I meet somebody super interesting, I might bring them with me.
That'll be cool. We might even have some fun, natural fun accents on the show.
Yay!
Look forward to accents on a future episode of Invasion of the Remake.
Yeah, and please...
That aren't bad imitations by us.
True.
Oh, yeah, because we don't do good ones.
Oh, yeah. I can sort of do Irish, and sometimes it goes in. So if I am doing a bad one, just really tell me about it, because I might not realize it's happening.
Well, why would we? Because that would be amazing.
Okay. Right.
I will just let it roll.
We're all about fun at your expense, Trish.
True.
Well, or mine.
Yeah,
or Jay's.
Or else. Don't feel safe. Nobody's safe on the mothership.
I'm not too precious for that shit. I'm fine. It's good.
All right. Well, now that we know we're not safe even in our own mothership, we're going to see if we can fly this thing a little bit further away from the sun.
Yeah.
I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I will remain Trish for the time being.
All right, and next time I buy a spaceship, I'm going to fucking go for the AC. Yeah. We are out of here.
Hey, Chris.
License and registration, please.
You're joking, right?
License and registration.
Huh. What's the problem, Sheriff?
You and the drugs you're peddling out of your casino.
Huh. Only thing that's going on at my casino right now is construction. You took care of that.
Yeah, that's right. I plan on taking care of everything else, too.
If you can, try to think this through. A casino is a license to print money. Why would I jeopardize that by selling drugs?
Because you own the town, Jay. It's changed now.
Really? See, the only thing that I think has changed around here is that you get to wake up every morning and put on that nifty little badge. But underneath that badge is the same guy who couldn't make it playing college football and apparently couldn't make it in the Army and not really going to ever make it as a cop.
Is that right?
Yeah. And if you push too hard, you're going to be a man who never gets a C-40. License, please. Thanks, Sheriff.
Sir, get your taillights fixed. It's your last warning.
What's wrong with my taillights?
They're broken.